Blog Talk Radio.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Hi. Okay, cool.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just great.
Good.
Have we officially already started the show? I think we have. Did you hear music?
I did.
Okay. Well, that's a first. I have never had that happen before.
Well,
wow. But we figured it out. It was a problem on my end with technology, but we did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Marilyn, thank you for your patience. And thank you, everybody. This is the beauty of live radio. All right. Well, let me officially welcome everyone to episode 224 of Heart and Soul for Women of Faith, where we talk boldly about faith, hope, purpose, prosperity, and how we're making a meaningful difference in the world as business owners, leaders, and entrepreneurs. We share our stories and strategies to encourage you in your journey and to help one another achieve success. I love this definition by the great Christian evangelist, Dr. Miles Monroe: success is obedience to purpose. I'm Jory Fisher, a featured host on Blog Talk Radio, with my guest Marilyn Murray Willison, who will speak with us today, October 12th, 2020, about the gift of stubborn optimism. I guess that's what I had just now. I had some stubborn optimism, determined to get this show on air. Well, welcome, Marilyn. Thank you for joining us in Heart and Soul. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. And your optimism worked.
Yes. Well, I'm just so glad you didn't hang up on me. God bless you. This is great. All right. Well, before I give our listeners a few instructions and invitations, what is the primary message that you want to be sharing with us today?
I like the idea of stubborn optimism because I think everybody's life at one point or another has some major challenges. So, you know, if as long as you are optimistic and believe that something wonderful is about to happen, the chances are it probably will, just maybe not on the timetable that you would like.
Well, I can't help but think about that. The visual image of the little boy coming downstairs on Christmas morning and finding a pile of manure under the Christmas tree and saying, "Where's the pony?"
Exactly. And that's true in all of our lives.
I know. Well, I'm just so excited to have you today. Okay, so a few little infomercials about Heart and Soul and about me, and then we'll come back to you, Marilyn. Heart and Soul for Women of Faith airs on Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to any of my archived on-demand episodes at blogtalkradio.com/Jory Fisher and on my website, joryfisher.com. Please follow my live interactive podcast by clicking on the little follow button on my Blog Talk Radio show page and creating a free Blog Talk Radio account. I also invite you to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. If you would like to comment or ask us a question, please call 515-605-9750. That number again is 515-605-9750. You'll be placed in a call queue and will be able to listen to the show while you wait. As for me, I'm a former public interest attorney and law professor who's been coaching and training lawyers and entrepreneurs since 2004. I love helping women of faith build thriving businesses and lead joyful, purpose-guided lives. Please visit my website, joryfisher.com, to enjoy hundreds of free resources, including blog posts, podcasts, videos, ebooks, and my Discover Your Purpose starter course. I also invite you to take a quick assessment to get a free customized report all about you. Knowing your bank code, as we call it, is a first step toward dramatically improving your relationships, and for our business owners out there, increasing your sales up to 300%. Go to crackmycode.com/report. That's crackmycode.com/report to rank your values, discover your bank code, and get your free personality profile. And now it is my grand pleasure to introduce my beautiful guest, Marilyn Murray Willison. She's a 7-time award-winning author, speaker, and highly respected international journalist. Her byline has appeared in a wide variety of magazines and newspapers, including the Sunday Times of London, the Daily Mail, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, the Miami Herald, Town and Country, Allure, and Ladies Home Journal. Her expertise ranges from book reviews, fashion trends, and travel articles to high-profile celebrity interviews, including Jackie and Joan Collins, Placido Domingo, Kirk Douglas, Audrey Hepburn, Heather Locklear, Paul McCartney, and Jane Seymour. Her 7 books include One Woman, 4 Decades, and 8 Wishes, which is a journalist's memoir of challenge, change, and growth. They also include The Self-Empowered Woman, 17 Characteristics of High Achievers, and I believe it's your most recent one, Be Bold, Cultivating Health and Happiness for Older Adults. Is there anything you'd like to add just to your bio, Marilyn? Did I miss anything super significant?
Well, I think one of the most significant experiences I had was interviewing Christopher Reeve a few months before he died. As you know, I'm in a wheelchair, and so is he. And we had an amazing afternoon together because my little manual wheelchair was dwarfed by his gigantic, big, all-purpose wheelchair.
Wow.
And how large he was. And he was very inspiring. And I think my favorite piece of advice he gave me was that those of us who have an illness need to take care of our bodies as much as possible, because you never mm-hmm. know when the cure might appear, and we want to be ready to hit the ground running. And I
That's
found that
beautiful.
So inspiring.
Wow. Well, let's start with, I mean, there's so many things that we can talk about. I think I'm just going to have you back again, if you don't mind. Tell me, oh, good, thank you. And this time I will know, not for me not to try to call you, but just to have you call in, and that worked great. So I know for the next time. So tell me about, you know, some of these other people that you interviewed. What was that experience of interviewing somebody famous like, just like with me interviewing you?
Oh, well, I'm not famous, but I think the interview I was most excited about was being able to spend a day with Audrey Hepburn, because I'd admired her for so many years, not only for her talent and her beauty, but her life story and how she had worked hard to help other children because she felt that UNICEF had saved her life. And hearing her talk about how there was a famous book and then, of course, a famous movie called A Bridge Too Far that actually stood on the town where she grew up. And she used to walk on that bridge to go to ballet class.
Wow.
When she was a little girl. But during the war, the Nazis were on one side and the Allies were on the other. And the people who lived in the middle had no access to food or medicine or anything even remotely resembling a normal life. And so things got so grim that her mother would grind up tulip bulbs in an effort to make a flour so that they would have something to eat. It tasted horrible and was pretty much impossible to do anything with. But she became so thin and so ill that it you know, prevented her from fulfilling her dream of being a ballerina. Anyway, that's why she worked so hard on behalf of UNICEF, because she knew what it was like to experience dramatic hunger as a child.
Well, it sounds like she is an example of somebody who had extreme stubborn optimism to go on and do all the things that she did and not just give up, right?
Right, because, I mean, you know, as we know, when bad times happen, it's very easy to just give up or to just say, you know, I can't, I have no control over my situation. And the truth is that no matter how big and how bad the situation is, there's always something, even if it's minuscule, that you do have control over. So if you can focus on that rather than the gigantic problems, you at least can feel a little bit better about your prospects and about who you are.
You're amazing. Well, let me ask you this, because, of course, I know you have stories about everybody that you interviewed, but if anybody was keenly listening to that amazing introduction of all the things that you have done and people you've interviewed, they probably heard the name Paul McCartney. And I'm guessing that you interviewed him before his wife died, his first wife. But I know that was okay. I know that would have been an awful thing as well. But what was that experience like interviewing Paul McCartney?
Well, having been a Beatles crazy teenager back in the 60s, I could think of was that I had captured bragging rights for my high school girlfriends for the rest of my life. Being with Paul McCartney was quite amazing, and he was remarkably down to earth and very kind and very pleasant. And at the time that I interviewed him, the teachers, at that time I was living in London, and the teachers union had gone on strike, and he wanted to talk about how much he did not like unions, and how when the band was starting out, they had to join the musicians union, which is something he didn't want to do, but in order to have a career, that's what they had to do. And he talked about how when his children were growing up, he was the chauffeur, that they did not have a lavish lifestyle, that it was as down to earth as possible for being famous and very wealthy. But he drove his kids to school and picked them up every day when he could. So
neat. That's neat. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for sharing that. You know, everybody's curious about how the rich and famous live, and he just always has struck me as being such a really authentic, genuine guy, and, of course, he created beautiful music. So thank you for sharing that little tidbit. Well, I am going to turn the tables on you, my dear. You are an amazing testament to, yes, stubborn optimism and faith and just true grit. So can you share with our audience, I know your story from having read one of your books. I'll have to keep going to read all of them. But can you please share your story? I want to tell everybody that I first ran across Marilyn. She writes prolifically, as you all can see. And I'd been reading her articles in a publication called The Epic Times, and I just thought, wow, this lady's amazing. And when I read her bio and found out she had multiple sclerosis, since I have a keen personal interest in that, I thought I definitely have to reach out to this amazing woman. So please share your story.
Okay, well, back in 1984, I was working at the Los Angeles Times, and I was health and fitness editor, living a very active, full life. I had two sons. I'd gone through a rather grim divorce, but I had a very busy life. My sons and I would go horseback riding twice a week, and we'd go jogging to the ice cream shop, and you know, I'd danced ballet for 8 years, so I'd been very athletic, and the Olympics were coming to town, and I had a very busy job with the Olympics at that time, and I took part, and I've been having some foot pain, so I chose to have an elective foot surgery on my toes, and I never walked normally again, and it seems like that was the trigger that initiated MS. And
really,
that was 1984, and so it was a great shock to me, who'd always felt that I could power through anything, and had always been outrageously healthy, and even professionally as health and fitness editor.
Right.
So it was a real shock. MS is known as the slow stroke because you gradually lose abilities, muscular abilities, and rather than in a stroke where it happens all at once. So, you know, through the years, I, you know, went from, you know, being a show jumper and very active to, you know, being completely wheelchair dependent. And at this point, I can move my left arm, and that's pretty much it. So I've had to completely rearrange my life and my priorities, and so it's a massive learning experience. So,
well, as you were talking about being a show jumper, and then of course now being in a wheelchair. Of course, I was thinking of Christopher Reeve. You know, you must have had a lot to talk about. my goodness.
Yes, we did. Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Because he was incredibly athletic, and I've heard from other people that you know, there are some similarities, and it does seem that very few couch potatoes get MS. It seems like MS is more common among people who kind of proverbially burn the candle at both ends.
I know. International gymnasts. I mean, there are just so many people. So, wow. Yep.
And the other thing about that's unusual is that it affects everybody differently. Some people, it affects their voice or their vision or numbness or whatever. And then other people, like me, you know, have muscular complications. So it just depends upon where the scar tissue in the brain happens to land. The latest theory is that all neurological complications stem from an overgrowth of bad bacteria in the microbiome. So there's been a big push to make sure that people have healthier probiotic abilities and things like that. So.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for turning me on to some of the books that you've told me about. I've been reading and sharing them with my daughters.
It's very important, and I've been kind of an outlier because I don't take any MS medications, and for me that has been a lifesaver because when I was health and fitness editor. Probably the biggest lesson that I felt that I got from that job was that all medications, even aspirin, all medications have a varying level of toxicity. And I just felt that if I was going to get healthier and better, I wasn't going to do it by pumping myself full of toxins. So
Well, I know a large group of people who are with you on that and are even with MS, and they are completely med-free. I, on the other hand, take Ocrevus infusions twice a year. So far, it seems to be working pretty well. I was posting on Facebook just over the weekend that I was happy that my cognitive test, everything had improved since I've been on Ocrevus. So, I know. So I was excited about that. So, you know, we all go different ways, right, to try to deal with our various aches and pains and illnesses. But You are quite a role model for me, young lady.
Well, I thank you, but I know that you know they're making progress all the time, and every day brings you that much closer to, you know, complete full health.
Absolutely. Well, if you don't mind sharing a little bit more about your story and how, you know, what happened when you were over in London and you were working and you were a single mom, and then it was around that point that you really had to change your life, right?
Right. Well, I was, you know, but when I went to London, I was still able to walk. And I, you know, it seemed like it was the kind of time where I had to keep my passport in my handbag all the time because I never knew where I was going to be sent or who I would be interviewing or whether I would wind up spending the night in Paris or whether I would be in South America or wherever I would be. And when walking became very challenging, that was no longer possible. I had to cut back on travel, and I had to, face the fact that my life was not going to be the way I thought it would be. You know, we all have vision plans of what our life is going to be, and I had to do some major downshifting and changes. So, I'm always looking for something positive. So, one benefit of my paralysis is that because I can't do all the other things I used to do, I'm able to read so much more than I used to. So
right.
It certainly allows me to be well informed and up to the minute in that area. So.
That's fantastic. Wow. So there you were, a single mom with MS, and now you're a grandmother, right? And I don't think you get to see your all of your family as much as you would like to, especially now with COVID. So you're so good about looking at the positive. Tell me something positive about that.
Well, I just, you know,
you have grandchildren, which is great.
Pardon me?
I said you have grandchildren, which is fantastic.
It is wonderful. Well, I think the only, you know, when you're faced with challenges, I think the only way to deal with that without losing your mind is to accept the fact that nothing is forever and that things can always change, and then you just make up your mind things will change for the better. So, yes, I don't get to see the people I love as often as I would like to, but I think that will change. I don't know when it'll change. I certainly don't know how it will change, but I just tell myself that, you know, the day will come somewhere, somehow, where I will be able to celebrate with the people I love. Because if you accept a situation that you don't like and think that things are always going to be grim, it doesn't help anything. It doesn't help the relationship you wish you had. It doesn't help your health. It doesn't help your mindset. It's just a kind of a negative place to be. And I think anybody with any physical challenge knows that how the mind works is a major component of getting well. They've proven that placebos can work simply because our minds tell us that they'll work. So if it's that powerful with a medication, imagine how powerful it can be with a mindset. I do think that there's a logical benefit to expecting something wonderful to happen.
Well, you and I have both been accused of being Pollyanna. I don't think it's hurt either one of us.
No, it hasn't. And I think, you know, who knows what positive benefits have come about. I mean, I'm sure that there are measurable ones like, you know, blood pressure or toxicity or that type of thing, but just emotionally, nobody wants to be around, you know, a Debbie Downer. So,
yeah.
You know, there's yeah. nothing to be gained by that. So.
Well, I will tell you, you know, that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, in my situation, I was raised by parents who were polar opposite. I had a father who was optimistic and a mother who was pessimistic. And uh-huh. I could speak for a whole radio show just on that. But I had a choice to make, and I chose optimism. You know, I could just see how the negativity was harmful to my mom and everybody that she was around and loved. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, I choose life.
Yeah.
So God bless my mom, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think people, you know, they give up their power when they they really feel that they can't make things better. I just believe that you can always make something better. You may not be able to solve the problem at hand, and you may not be able to, you know, I mean, I can't go for a walk, but, you know, I can send a card to somebody I care about, or I can learn about something. There's always something that you have a little bit of control, and when people abdicate that feeling of control, you know, it's like they've put themselves in a prison.
I totally agree. And something that I would love for you to address is I always talk with my clients about transferable skills and how it's something that you learned when you were in one job or younger or something like that can transfer over into your new business or your new career. And you have learned how to call in stories.
Yeah. Yes.
So can you talk about that and how it helps you now?
Yeah, when I worked at the LA Times, you know, we were pretty much the only paper in town, and we were a big, powerful, kind of a behemoth paper, which was a wonderful place to be in. So when I interviewed, say, you know, Princess Anne or Patrick Duffy or anybody like that, there was never any time pressure. Well, I moved from the LA Times to London, where there are 11 daily newspapers, and I had an editor who was terrified of being scooped by somebody else. So I had to learn to interview somebody and then go to the nearest red phone box and call in and dictate my story. At the time, I'd never done that before, but you really, you know, I was under a lot of pressure, and I definitely couldn't afford to fail in my job, so I just did what I had to do, and it never occurred to me that the day would come when I would no longer be able to type, and yet, you know, here I am, thanks to that skill of being able to compose and dictate a story. I'm able to still get published, and in fact, my last three books were dictated to typists. So, because I can't type anymore.
Wow, that just totally blows me away. Because I'm a visual person, and when I write, I have to now. You know, maybe sometime it'll be different, but I have to look at what I'm typing in order to compose it. And so, oh my gosh, I can't imagine how you do that. But that's awesome. You're awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Well, the book that I got to read was the one that is a great gift for anybody who's approaching the ripe age of 65. And in it, you talked about how a motto that you've carried with you, I don't know how long, became actually each chapter of your book. So how would you feel about going through that with us?
Oh, sure. Well, when I was in college at UCLA, in Psychology 101, I learned about the French psychotherapist Émile Coué. And back in the early 1920s, Émile Coué was pretty famous in Paris because number one, things to do with psychology were kind of on the vanguard. And number two, what made him different was that no matter what the patient's problem was, he always gave them the same prescription. And Emil Coué believed that the brain can only handle one message at a time. So you can't be optimistic and pessimistic at the same time. You can't be brave and terrified at the same time. The brain can only, you know, handle one particular emotion at a time.
Wow.
So to flood the brain cells with positive emotions so that they would squeeze out the negative ones. So what his prescription, whether you were an alcoholic or you were depressed or you were suicidal or you were obese or whatever the issue was, it didn't matter. His prescription was that 3 times a day, 20 minutes a time, you had to repeat every day in every way, I am getting better and better. And the fact that you would devote 180 minutes of your day to that message would squeeze out the negativity and the bad things. And he was relatively successful. So when I learned about that, I thought, oh, my God, this is wonderful. All I have to do is make up my mind of what I want out of life and tell myself it enough times, and it'll come true. So, you know, with the massive wisdom of a 20-year-old, I decided that what I wanted out of life. And so my mantra became, I am healthy, beautiful, loved, enlightened, happy, famous, rich, and thin. Because I thought that that would cover all the bases. There would be nothing else out of life for if I got those things. Well, you know, if I were in an airplane with a lot of turbulence, for example, or if I couldn't fall asleep at night, or if I was nervous waiting for an interview, that was kind of like my mantra. You know, some people use worry beads. I used my mantra. And what I realized when I turned 65 was that what those adjectives meant when I was 20 had no bearing or relationship at all to what they were when I was retirement age. So the book is just an examination of what a certain talent meant when I was young and then how it changed through time and what it became once I turned 65.
Well, what advice would you have for, I'm going to ask you, what advice would you have for the younger person who's listening to this? And then, of course, very much related to your new book about being bold, what advice would you have for somebody who's a senior who wants to have a healthy, happy life? So let's start with the young person. What advice or words of wisdom would you share?
I think one of the most important things when you're young is to focus on what you want out of life. It doesn't mean that you'll get it, but it definitely can set you on a clear path, and it will prevent you from hopping around and wasting your time, letting life dictate to you rather than you making up your own mind of what you want. So I would encourage people, young people, to focus on, figure out what would make them happy, what would make them feel that they're using their talents, and set some goals. And they don't have to be big ones, but working a little bit towards a goal every day is definitely a good idea.
I'm sorry, before you move on to the older people, what about, you know, young people hear a lot of messages from parents and teachers and boyfriends, girlfriends. I mean, it seems like, or the media, you know, but it seems like so many messages are coming in to young people about what they should do in order to be successful. So what would you say to somebody who's hearing conflicting messages, maybe from a parent? It's different from what they're hearing from a teacher or from some expert that they've been studying.
Wow. When I wrote my book about the self-empowered woman, I took great solace in the fact that a lot of women I'd never met and never interviewed, although I did include a lot of interviews in that book, a lot of women I never met or interviewed still inspired me. And rather than continually reinvent the wheel about what works and what doesn't work, I just found that mimicking or paying attention to people who've accomplished what you want to accomplish is a good idea. I mean, if you want to be a writer, a best-selling author, for example, then you're not necessarily going to want to follow the life path that Barbara Streisand did, because her dream was music. If you want to be a great teacher, then you're not going to be interested in following Missy Copeland's life because she's a dancer. Mm. So find people who are in the field that you care about and learn from them.
Good
what
advice.
Mistakes they make? What lessons have they learned? You know, what can you learn from their experiences so that you don't have to waste time reinventing the wheel?
Ah, that's fantastic. And I assume part of that encouragement would include reading good books, so whether it's biographies or autobiographies about the people you admire. I love the fact that you're a reader. That's awesome.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's move to the older generation. What do you say to us?
I think that it's very beneficial to as they say, not go gently into that dark night. That just viewing it's not over till it's over. And whether you're 65 or 75 or 85, there's a lot to still learn and enjoy and treasure in life. So I think one thing that I've benefited from in a way is that I didn't have any older role models in my life, so I don't really know what somebody should be like. I don't have a mental feel, you know, because I didn't have grandparents and my parents died when I was rather young. So don't let other people's experiences or how they have, quote, embraced age define how you embrace age, because just because it was right for them doesn't mean that it's right for you. And definitely we don't need anybody telling us what we can't do. When people have said no to me, I've always thought of no as an opinion rather than a fact.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I like it. I've also heard no can also mean not yet. But I like that with an opinion, not a fact. That's really good. Well, you certainly have had a lot of experiences in your lifetime that have given you a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of stories for all of the writing, the prolific writing that you do. I really have been enjoying your articles that I've been reading, along with the one book, and I need to read more. You're amazing. What else would you like to share with us about other books?
My other books or just books in general?
Yes. No, yours.
My first book was Diary of a Divorced Mother, and it came from, I had a newspaper column in L.A. That ran twice a week, and a publisher in New York was visiting L.A. and read the papers in the morning and saw my column and liked it, and that turned into my first book, and my second book was a sequel to that. My third book was written in London, and it was about how famous women, how they dealt with everyday problems and everyday issues like self-image and finances and things like that. And then my fourth book was about being in a wheelchair and, you know, managing life when you no longer have the ability to walk and you're no longer mobile. And my fifth book was The Self-Empowered Woman, which was a passion of mine. I'd my whole life been intrigued by women who led unconventional lifestyles, and I keeping track of the different biographies and autobiographies I read, I pinpointed 17 traits that pop up again and again in different manifestations in high-achieving women's lives. And I only found one woman who had all 17, and that's Marie Montessori. But Coco Chanel had 16, which is pretty close. But for anybody who's interested in what accomplished women have in common with each other, because I found it very interesting that no matter what country you grew up in or what your dream was, you probably have certain traits in common with other high-achieving women. So, for example, you could be a pianist from Japan, and you would have many of the same personality traits and characteristics as a woman right activist in Iran.
Isn't that something?
Isn't that something?
So your book is on women from all over, not just a particular area, international.
Right, absolutely. So, and all my books are available on Amazon, and I hope people will check into it. The only one that's not in hard copy is Be Bold, Cultivating Health and Happiness, but that's on Kindle.
Okay. And you have an Amazon author page. How can people access that?
I think if you just go to Amazon Books and then type in my name, you'll see the books that I've written. And when I'm not writing my own books, I help other authors get their books in shape. I'm in, here in Florida, I'm known as the book doctor. So you'll see my authors and their books and their stories. And I've done everything from a book about what you need to know to sail around the world on a sailboat to memoirs, to novels, to cookbooks, to you name it. So I just, you know, there's so many things in life I can't do. Like, please don't ask me to put my checking account. But when it comes to words and books, That I can do, and that's my purpose
words.
And what I love to do.
You can do words. That's fantastic.
I can do words. I love words. Absolutely.
Clearly. Clearly. That's fantastic. Well, I know that you have also created something really special for, I mean, you have such a beautiful complexion. So can you tell people about that?
Oh, thank you. Yes. Well, as part of my MS protocol and my all-natural bent toward good health and good living, I started doing something a number of MS patients do who don't choose to use regular medications, and that is get stung by bees, live bees, to introduce bee venom into their system. And the bee venom helps regulate the immune system and is very good at alleviating some of the pain that can accompany MS. And as part of that, I also knew that Kate Middleton, Prince William's wife, had kind of introduced bee venom in beauty products in the UK.
She was the one. I didn't know that.
Well, it might have started before her, but she's certainly the most famous and most beautiful bee venom user. So I now make my own skin cream in my kitchen, and it includes coconut and vitamin E and bee venom and blue methylene, and it's called Blue Bee Beauty. And it's, as far as I know, it's the most affordable skin cream that moisturizes and tightens pores at the same time. So,
well, that's amazing. I've used it for all of 3 nights now.
Oh, yeah,
so far so good. Yeah, it feels really good. And I'll be sure to report back to you any additional results. I'm sure I'll see many, but it is nice. You just use a teeny little bit and it goes a long way. So how, if somebody were interested in number one, seeing your gorgeous complexion, and number two, purchasing this, is it for sale for everybody, or how, what could they do?
Well, they can send me an email. My email address is mmw@marilynwillison.com. And if they send me a check for $40, that will pay for the skin cream and the postage.
Wonderful.
And as long as they're not allergic to bees, they'll see certainly within 7 days, you'll see a difference in your overall complexion. So,
oh, boy. That's exciting.
And it's particularly good for the neck area. If you're worried about neck wrinkles, this will help you out.
Is there a particular age people should start using it?
I don't know. I didn't start using it until I was older, but I think that some beauty writers refer to the bee venom as Botox instead of Botox because it tightens your skin, so you don't develop wrinkles. But my oldest customer is 86 years old, and she's happy. So, I think you're never too old to care about how you look, right?
Absolutely. Right. I totally agree. That's fantastic.
It's the only cream I use. My skincare routine is 5 minutes in the morning, and that's it. I don't do anything to my face until the next morning. And I don't use sunscreen. So that's pretty much all you need to do. That 5 minutes will take care of you for the next 24 hours. So
that's amazing. Well, tell me more. I am really curious about this. You go in on Mondays and get, I guess it's Mondays. Is it Mondays where you go get stung by bees? Tell us more about that.
It's called apitherapy. And the bee man comes to me. What apitherapy is it follows, it follows the precepts of acupuncture. And so what they do is they take a live bee and they place it on what would be an acupuncture point on your body, and the bee stings you, it hurts and it gets red.
Yes.
And it just pulls a lot of the good stuff that your body has to that particular point. There's also a technique that's called tapping, where they actually remove the stinger from the bee and tap it on the area, which is not as painful. But for anybody who believes in acupuncture, this is like acupuncture on steroids. And it's a great boost your immune system. I mean, for example, one tip that I can share with you is, we've all heard of EpiPens. So that, if you get stung by a bee and you go into anaphylactic shock, you have an EpiPen that neutralizes the poison. Well, before they had, what did they do before they had EpiPens? They would give you drink. They would give you a drink of alcohol. So vodka or scotch or beer or any kind of alcohol neutralizes the benefit of bee venom.
Oh.
So that's your trivia point for the day. But being
you shouldn't have a drink right after getting your treatment, right?
No, within 12 hours before or after your B things, you want to avoid alcohol.
Okay. Told me about getting these B, I thought you were saying B shots or whatever. I mean, I know somebody who has MS who literally goes in and gets a dose of vitamin B, right? So that's what I thought you were talking about. And then you said something about bee sting, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she doesn't mean the vitamin. She means the insect.
Yes, right. They actually, I first learned about it, probably maybe 15 years ago, 60 Minutes. Did an episode on bee sting therapy for MS, and there are a number of if you catch your MS early enough, it can definitely have a positive effect. So I'm not expecting to get up and walk anytime soon, but it's definitely arrested the development of my decline, and
that's
I'm
awesome.
Very happy to have. So
that's right, and like you said, regarding your your interview with Christopher Reeve, you want to be ready so that when the cure comes, you can take advantage of it, right?
Right. And the other, if I had any other piece of advice, it would be to get as much physical therapy and movement as you can so that you don't get stiff.
Right. Right. Yeah, I do have to say that I've done pretty well with the pandemic, but it definitely did make a difference, the fact that I wasn't being able to go out and do water aerobics and stuff like that. And with the gym closed, I wasn't able to move as much. So I have definitely, I've been in more pain as a result of not moving as much. So I wholeheartedly agree with you.
If you could find a massage therapist who could, who would be willing to work on you, that makes a big difference. When they can move your limbs, and that I highly recommend that, once or twice a week.
Oh, I'm only doing it once a month.
Oh no.
Okay, I'm going to tell my husband, honey. I have to get a massage twice a week. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. There you go. But it's not. Oh. You're not doing it for luxury. You're doing it for health purposes.
Have you ever heard of active resistance therapy, ART? I also do that.
Okay. Is that where you push?
I've only done it with chiropractors. And, yes, it's a combination of, I guess, pushing and pulling. If a chiropractor were listening to me right now, they'd be like, oh, Jory, you need to learn what this science is all about. But, I was having, I was going to a different chiropractor, and she said, you need to go to this other chiropractor because he also does active resistance therapy. And she figured that would really help with my pain. So, that's what I do.
The pushing is very valuable because, number one, it stimulates your muscle and keeps your muscle energized. And number two, it helps with circulation. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I didn't know that, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, Marilyn, I love talking to you. This is great. Would you do me the honor of coming back on air sometime?
Anytime you want. Anytime at all. You just call.
Oh, you're amazing. I am so glad we connected, and I have to thank the Epic Times for it.
Well, I'm so glad. And I'm so glad that is syndicated through Creators Syndicate out of California. So they will be happy if people get my columns are grouped together in the book Be Bold. So if you like the columns, you'll like the book Be Bold.
Good. Fantastic. Well, is there anything else that you would like to share today with our listeners?
Just the fact that there's a great benefit to being a stubborn optimist, and I can't think of any benefit at all in being pessimistic and angry.
I agree. I totally agree. Well, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening to Heart and Soul for Women of Faith. Marilyn, you've just been fantastic and generous in sharing your wisdom. And I look forward to hearing from you again. I also want to thank my friend David Nephew for sharing his beautiful music on this show. You're hearing it right now. Again, please visit JoriFisher.com for free resources. And, of course, go to Marilyn's website, MarilynWillison.com. I said that right, right? You don't use your middle name for your website, correct?
Yeah, just MarilynWillison.com.
Okay, fantastic. Well, everyone, may the Lord bless you, keep you, and be gracious unto you. And may the Lord help you fulfill your purpose and achieve divine success and use stubborn optimism whenever you need it. God bless you, Marilyn. God bless everybody.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.